Everybody likes guns, they just don't know it. Deep inside of his soul, there's a cowboy trying to get out.
Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
Hello and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 167. Tonight with us, we have Thomas.
Hello.
Mike.
Hello.
And Benny.
Hey,
that's
Benny.
That's me. Hi. Thomas, what are you doing guns this week?
Well, before we start, happy birthday, Benny.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Yes. Yeah, good stuff.
I'm one year older now.
And 1 year wiser. Okay, we'll have to ask MD about that one. What did I do? I didn't do any shooting. It's been so damn cold. And of course, then I wiped out walking the dog the other day. So I'm limping and my wrist is sore and my hips are sore. I'm getting old too. I did do some brass prep. I got some loading data from... I contacted Mike from the Loading Podcast, asked him what was good powder for 44 Magnum a couple months ago. So I do have some data. So I figure, okay, I'll brass some prep. So I was using that nice tumbler that Benny has lent me. So I got all my 44 brass done. And then I was still playing around with my Hatson HPATS. I noticed that the grip was kind of low. I figured, oh, so I pushed it up a little bit and it moved. Figured, oh, I wonder if this thing comes off. And I pulled down and the whole grip came off my hand because it's just a rubberized sleeve that goes up a plastic sleeve. So I put a couple of drops of Crazy Glue on that, shoved up there tight. No problem. It hasn't moved since. And I gave up trying to mount the red dot on my BL-22. Like crosshairs are okay still, but all my red dots with my right eye are getting kind of blurry. It's the cataract. So even open sights are worse, even with my shooting glasses now. So being right-handed, right eye dominant, and all my guns are right-handed kind of sucks. But I do have an appointment to see the eye doctor in 2 weeks, and then he's probably recommend me to the surgeon. So until then, unless I'm using optics, I haven't been doing much shooting because it's kind of not safe if you can't see the sight. And the red dot's just a big blur. It sucks.
I believe they call that defensive shooting when you're, or instinctive shooting.
Yeah. A lot of military.
Feel the gun, like Thomas. Be one with the gun.
You know what I did last time when I got my Q100, I set the target up at 20 yards, and I'm using a prescription that's like 8-9 years old, so I can actually see the front sight with the old prescription, and I'm still having a hard time. And we've got a portable target stand at the side, and I actually pulled the portable target stand up, lined it up, and put it at 10 yards so I could see the target. So from now on, if I post any targets, they're at 10 yards.
That's good. Mike, what did you do in guns this past couple of weeks? It's been a while since you've been on the show.
Yeah, I know. I've been doing some dry firing. I ended up changing the grips on my GP100. I don't know what it was. I was just playing with it, and I found my old grips when I was moving stuff around, and I was kind of looking at them, and I realized, you know, as much as I hate the finger grooves on these ones, it actually reduces my trigger pull, or the length of pull, by about a quarter of an inch, just based on the size of the grip. So I switched to those. I figure I'll give them a try for a little while and see how it goes.
Are those the Hogue grips?
No, these grips have no names on them. The Hogue grips are the ones I used to have on there, but these ones, they have no name. They came with the gun because I bought the gun secondhand, so I have no idea where they came from. But the difference is that the Hogue grips add about a quarter of an inch on, like, at the back of the gun. These ones don't. They're flush up against the back of the gun, so it just... I don't know. I've kind of measured the length of pull on my PPQ, and I found that it is shorter than what my revolver is. So I figured I'd give it a try, see if that changes much. And to go along with that, I'm working on my crush grip. So that's part of my dry fire practice right now, is working on that, trying to become, to make it instinctive that as soon as I get both hands on that gun, just to start pretty much crushing as hard as I can on that gun. I think that's one of my recoil control issues, is I'm just not gripping the gun as tight as I possibly can. And then outside of that, I'm working on picking up the front sight as the gun's coming up a lot faster. And I don't know what it is, but I'm just having trouble picking it up quickly. And this came from, I noticed in my some of my shooting videos, when I compared myself to other people, I seem to almost take an extra second when I'm bringing the gun up. It seemed to take me a little bit longer to get the gun on target. So I figure that has to do with me not being able to pick up the sight quick enough. So just working on that, seeing hopefully I can get that under control. And then, like Thomas, it's reloading season, so a lot of depriming and cleaning, all the new-to-me brass. And I finally got around to reloading, and I got 300 rounds ready for my Pennsylvania match. So there's that, and cleaned up the GP, cleaned the GP100, so everything is everything's ready to go.
Cool.
Yep.
Awesome.
How about you, Benny?
So I had a really disappointing week for my 2018 goals. I did not work out this week. I did sort of dry fire, not really.
Sort of not really?
Yeah, it was more of like, I didn't actually pull the trigger. It was more of a...
mental exercise?
Yes. Gear manipulation kind of thing.
So you sat in front of the TV and played with your guns?
No, actually. I ran around the house seeing how long it would take me to access my firearms if I was on the completely wrong side of the house.
Well,
so it's not something I'm going to use anytime soon.
Practice is practice.
Right. But interestingly enough, identifying which key early on helps. It cut down my time from 50 seconds to 35 seconds. So,
which key? Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so that helped. I did catch up on my gun podcast, so I was going to ask Mike, do you listen to the Safety Solutions Academy podcast?
Yes, I do. You're talking about the one with Masoud Ayoub?
Yeah, because you said crush grip, yep. And I was like, that was the first thing that went into my mind.
Yeah, well, so that was one of the things that got me thinking about it again, was he was talking about it, and it was making me think, am I doing it properly or not? And it was in dry fire that I realized I wouldn't, so that's why I was working on it.
So I think I should start working on something like that, but I think, like you said, I should record myself shooting and see how I manage recoil and everything. Because I recently did change my grip from, I used to curl my my index finger on my left hand around the trigger guard, and then someone pointed out that I'm actually twisting the gun like that, and that's why I was pulling my shots
to the left.
I think to the left. Yeah. So
yeah, it makes sense to me if you're pulling it to the left. Yeah.
Right. So now I have to dry firing is training me to not do that, and I gotta to practice with a new kind of grip and stuff. So
yeah, oh yeah, dry fire is a great place to practice that and get comfortable with it, so that when you do get to the range, you're not trying to teach yourself something like just how to grab the gun. When you get to the range, you can focus on the shooting part of it.
Exactly.
Especially these days when it's minus 20 out, you don't want to spend any more time outside than you have to.
Yeah, I was working on Friday. Otherwise, that would have been a great day to go to the range. It was like +5 in Toronto.
I know. It was like 10 degrees here. I wanted to go so bad, but I had no ammo.
Yeah, so that's that. Mike, what's guns in the news? What's up?
Okay, story number one. Canadian importer and retailer Serafim Armory will no longer be selling firearms at the retail level. So this is from their website. Due to the complexities of the Canadian market and the delays over the past 3 years, we have decided to take the long, slow road and distribute directly to retailers. This may change in the future, but for now, we will have inventory according to production capabilities and can offer discount to the retailers that pre-order. We appreciate the support that we have received and look forward to working with all of our Canadian firearm dealers. We have a limited stock of the Storm Version 2, Pale Rider, and Intrepid. We can currently take orders in lots of 5. Mixed orders are okay. Shipping costs don't make sense for smaller lots. And we found a note online from a retailer that said previous Storm Box magazines are not interchangeable with the new Version 2 models. So I would verify that with Serafim Armory first. They also said for us to stay tuned because they are changing their pistol production to a US-based manufacturer. Apparently, to get back to their largest pistol market base, the US market, Yeah.
Well, they market in the States. I think it's ATI. So they do have a very big U.S.-based market. I've been really looking at their Archangel 1911. And, you know, I've gone on their website and I've looked at the mission statement. It's funny. It says on their website that their 1911s are designed in Canada and made to their exclusive specification by a contract manufacturer in the Philippines. And we've been discussing that. And, you know, to me, no, John Moses Browning designed the 1911. And SAM manufacturer, small arms manufacturer, actually manufactures and produces copies of that design for Seraphim Armory. I'm just going to call it SA because we all disagree on the pronunciation of the name. Changing a few parts already made in-house does not make you a gun designer or producer by any stretch of the imagination. That's just my opinion. You're simply an importer or distributor that changes a few minor in-house parts on the SAM pistol. And also another thing, I was discussing this with somebody. Somebody was kind of didn't like the fact that they put SA in the serial number made in Philippines on the data stamp. And it's not there to deceive you in believing that the gun was made by Seraphim Armory. On the contrary, it's just a manufacturer way of identifying which company the gun was made for. Like, for example, my first grandpa, X-Trim, the serial number was DA12345. Well, DA just means Dalask Arms. So it's just a way for the manufacturer of seeing who the actual gun was made for. And SAM is a small arms and manufacturing in the Philippines. So I'll just refer to them as SAM. It's a very large, respectable manufacturer of guns, gear, and law enforcement in the Philippines. And as we mentioned earlier, they also make the ATI brand that SA uses in the States. And on a side note, I'm sure that the three major earthquakes that devastated the Philippines last April must have had a major impact on both production and distribution for both Arms Corps and SAM. Obviously, this had a very negative impact on all the Canadian importers and distributors who had money tied up in undeliverable products. Overall reviews have been very positive on Seraphim Armory and other SAM 1911 pistols, although Caliber magazine did have some issues with extraction tension being a little too light on the three models they tested. Actually, I put a link in the show note if you want to read the reviews. And JT's SAM extractor did snap in half at a match last year, so it shows you that sometimes ejectors should not be made of MIM parts. But as far as I know, the manufacturer was contacted and the future extractor's attention was adjusted correctly. As for switching 1911 production to the U.S., the only U.S.-based manufacturers of budget-priced 1911s I can think of are Auto Ordnance and Ivor Johnson. So if anybody knows any other U.S.-based manufacturer that makes inexpensive pistols, write the show, let me know, because those are the only two that I know of. But if you do like the SA lineup of SAM pistols, because they are half-decent 1911s, and they're no longer available. Well, if you're still looking for one, Wolverine Supplies does carry them. They have the SAM Thunderbolt, which is Wolverine's edition of the Archangel, minus the fiber optic front sight Delta Styled Hammer. But enough said about 1911s. Seraphim Armory does have some really new cool-looking Turkish shotguns coming up, and we've included those in the What's New segment of our show. So, Benny, what's story two?
Story two, official ruling in the interest of safety, NROI Canada will be prohibiting the use of Blackhawk SERPA holsters and their variants that unlock in the same manner, using the trigger finger to release the firearm above the trigger guard, as of January 1st, 2018. The design of this holster has resulted in many documented accidents, has been banned by multiple law enforcement agencies and other sporting associations. This covered under Rule 5.2.6, Range Master's Authority, IPSC Canada has deemed it unsafe and is use will not be permitted by any IPSC competitions. Many U.S. police forces and several top training academies have either outright banned the use of SERPA holsters and its variants, or several restrict what trained personnel can use them for training. Besides the numerous negligent discharges being documented from improper use, there's also a numerous documented cases of the locking tab being seized solid by either contact or debris. This locking the gun inside the holster makes it impossible to remove the gun from the holster. If you want to see a good video about the SERPA hot garbage holster, follow the link in the show notes.
So I'm the only one that actually saw the video, right?
Yeah, I haven't actually watched it yet.
He makes a lot of good points. It's an inexpensive holster that's available at Walmart. It's something that the new shooter, when he goes into a gun store, it's not a lot of money, And the a lot of times the gun shop make a high profit margin on it, so it sells a lot. And his main thing, I guess, for the video is if you can buy it at Walmart, it's not a good holster for self defense. But I put the link in the show notes. If you want to check it out, it's pretty cool.
I'm curious though. So will they still will IPSC still allow the gun if you disassemble the locking portion of it?
You can't.
No, because then it wouldn't have any. I'm assuming, and this is an assumption after listening to like three episodes of what was the thing that they started shoot that Trevor was on for shooting sports that
action
didn't last very long.
Action shooting
radio.
Yeah.
And listening to Slamfire, there wouldn't be anything retaining the firearm in your holster anymore. So when you jumped, it would come right out, and so I don't think it'd be a suitable holster.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's no pressure fit.
Because I do remember shooting with someone who had ripped that part out of their holster, that locking mechanism out of the holster, so that he could use it just as a regular holster and didn't have to worry about pushing the button.
The problem is if you're on the move and your gun falls over the holster, you're automatically disqualified.
Yeah.
So
yeah, if there is no other retention there, yeah.
So in the pre-show, Thomas and I were talking, and Thomas and I both have had the IMI version of the Serpa holster, and I haven't had any problems with it, but I think that's more of something I was aware that there might be an issue with this ahead of time, and I trained myself to go to classes but be proficient enough not to, slip my finger into the trigger guard or anything like that. So it is a training issue.
It is a training issue. And I also noticed that, because I had the CZ, so it's basically the same gun as yours. My button on my IWI was extremely heavy. And what happens a lot of times is that if you don't, if it's not coming out, you tend to push and pull really hard to get it out if you don't draw the holster properly. And because the trigger guard at the side of the CZ is beveled, if you pull that gun out really hard and fast and you've got a lot of pressure on your finger, when you pull it out, your finger tends to hit the bevel of the trigger guard and it just slides right into the trigger. But unlike the Serpas, the IWIs are adjustable. The Serpa, the whole mechanism is enclosed. You can't adjust it at all. With the IDI, there's a pin. So all I did was take the pin out, take a couple of links off the pin, and then the locking tab had a sharp 45. I just rounded the locking tab. So then it still locked securely, but it didn't take as much pressure. Like, it probably took about 15 pounds of pressure to unlock it originally. And the way I adjusted it, you could get it down to a couple of pounds. But like you said, it is a training issue, because Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns did a video, and as long as you drew the gun properly from the holster, there was no issue. The minute that Matthew drew it improperly, it discharged and he shot his holster. So I think because of the lack of training, and that there has been issues at matches, so I think it's better just to ban the gun anyway. If people aren't going to use it properly and the mechanism is causing negligent discharges, I don't disagree with them banning it.
The problem is, though, is like you said at the beginning, is that this is a very affordable holster, which by banning it, you're making the sport more expensive to get into. I know shooting itself is an expensive hobby to be in, but if you're just going to show up with your Glock 17 that your buddy had suggested you buy before, or some other off-brand polymer or striker fire 10-round gun, and you're just looking for a holster because maybe your club doesn't even let you use a holster when you're not doing competition. So you're just looking for something. Yeah, exactly. So what if you're just looking for the cheapest holster you can find so that you can go shoot one match and decide if you like the game or not, right?
There's now, other options, though.
There are other options, but that is one of the most widely available and cheapest options that are out there.
Interesting point. Oh, Uncle Mike has its own issues, but I just want to point out that the person who probably shouldn't be using the holster then is that person.
I agree, but you are
that's the issue. That is an issue.
I understand that, but you are making it more difficult for people to get into the shooting game by making it illegal.
That is true. There are friction fit magazines that don't have a locking device that are the same price as a Serpa holster.
Yeah, because I actually, my P226 is a Blackhawk, because that's who makes the Serpa, right? Blackhawk?
Yeah.
I have that, but it doesn't have the it's not a Serpa. It doesn't have that locking mechanism. But I was just lucky that that's what they had at the tiny little gun shop that only had two holsters, one for a Glock and one for a 226.
Well, that's the problem, too, is that a lot of these smaller shops, like you said, it costs money to keep stuff in stock. So if it's selling and it's popular, the gun shops are going to stock it because they make, first of all, they make a good profit on it.
Yeah.
And they know they can sell it. Like, you know, if the new person walks in and they've got, you know, say a race holster for $150, or they've got an Uncle Mike's or a Serpa for $35, you know, the choice is going to go to the cheaper holster.
Yeah.
So interesting. In my research to go to SHOT Show, I did discover a company in the States, and I don't know if I'm going to see. I don't think anyone's bringing their stuff into Canada, but they're pretty affordable holsters. They are inside the waistband. Their outside the waistband is a little more expensive. It's $60 US, but their inside the waistband is only $35 US. So
whoa,
that's not bad.
What are they all Kydex?
They are mostly Kydex. I think they have some part the holster is Kydex, but then it's got Kydex and then a leather piece and then a tab that goes onto your belt. So it's better. It's more form fitting.
Okay. So it's more like a crossbreed or
sort of.
Yeah.
Cause like the crossbreed does have both a Kydex and leather around the gun. This one's only Kydex around the gun, and the leather is just there as a malleable material to allow it for the whole unit to stick closer to your body.
Oh, so okay.
The leather rest against your skin?
So the Kydex does it as well, I think. It's actually, they're called Klinger holsters, which is on their website right now. They have Beretta 92F and FS, Beretta PX or Storm, like a whole list of them. Katnik TP9SA, Colt 1911, CZs, CZ 2075. I didn't know that was a thing. PO7, PO7 Duty, Glocks, FN, FNS, Compact. They have FN 509, HK, a whole bunch of them. Honor Guard, subcompact barrel, Kimber, Magnum Research. Oh, they do have the. Oh, okay. They just added that. That's awesome. The baby Desert Eagle, semi-compact, Ruger American. They have a whole list of things here. So I didn't see this before. Awesome. So yeah, go to their website, check out what they have. And if you want to order one, send inquiries to Benny at BennyLewis.ca, and maybe I'll bring them in for you guys.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, that is weird the way that they're... They literally just use leather, just like a malleable piece to go between the holster and the clip.
So the interesting thing is their V2 no print Wonder holster, which is what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
It can convert to the other kind of holster. Like it's one design and you can flip back and forth.
Yeah, they pre-drill the hole so you could just add a little clip onto it and just I guess in case you don't like the style. And actually, it looks like you can even flip the tabs around and wear it as an outside the waistband holster, too.
Yep.
What doesn't this holster do?
I don't know.
What does it retail for in the States?
$59.99.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah. So, cool. Exactly. Sorry, I was looking at the No Print Wonder. That's what I was looking at. But they have the V2 Ultra Conceal outside the waistband, which converts to the Stingray holster, which is their inside the waistband with just like a clip on the belt, and it also converts to the No Print Wonder holster. So it's like a 2-in-1.
Yeah.
Now I gotta order it.
I've been looking at the Red Hill Tactical stuff lately, to be honest. He's got some nice stuff.
It's good stuff. Oh,
okay, so If you're looking for custom holsters, yeah, he's definitely the guy to go to. This is for people who are looking to get that cheap holster for their backup gun. Or they just want to try to get into IPSC or IDPA.
And then, well, we've all started with cheap holsters. I've got my 1911 gun is still an Uncle Mike's. It works fine.
Yeah.
I've never had a need to replace it. You know, for my ex-Cal, I've got a Red Hill Tactical, but if I shoot PPC, there's nothing wrong with my Uncle Mike's. And I still use Uncle Mike mag holders. I think they cost me $15, $20 a piece. I think the holster was $30, $35. I've had that 15 years. The only thing you have to do is that the retention is friction fit and it's on rubber gasket. So the rubber will dry out with time. So you either have to adjust the tension or just replace the rubber gaskets. But for the money, I'm happy with it.
Yeah. So what's new in the industry, Mike?
Okay. So Jero, we're going to call him Jero K, founder and CEO of Grand Power, announced today that his highly anticipated Streibog SP9A1, the pistol version, has received approval from the ATF. Jero is confident that the submitted test pistol will be returned in time in order for it to be included at the Grand Power booth at SHOT Show.
Woohoo! Sorry.
The Streibog has become very popular in European market, and the Canadian distributor has been waiting with anticipation for ATF approval before even attempting to submit a test gun to the RCMP. This, however, is no guarantee that the RCMP will approve the Streibog or its variants in Canada. The good news is that since it is a pistol design, our Canadian obligatory 10-round pistol magazine will be available for carbine versions. However, the submitted pistol version does accept AR stocks on the ATF approval sample. No word on a non-restricted version at this time.
I've been getting a lot of questions about this, and we can't do anything until we get the ATF approval. So I think Dave's going to step forward and try to get a sample to submit to the RCMP. Because it looks cool. John Fitzgerald's been messaging me for a year about this thing.
Grand Power Canada did post a video today about this, and I asked about it, and they said basically that because the ATF said it's okay, they think it's gonna it's very likely it's gonna go through with the RCMP. And then I asked about mags, and they said it does use proprietary mags, but you can insert a sleeve that will let you use Glock LAR mags, but I was like, I thought, you know, I wasn't sure, but it turns out they have LAR mags that are chambered in 9mm. So I wasn't sure what he was referring to, but learned something new today, so that was good.
I thought it was the Uzi mags.
Do we have prices on these?
No, nothing yet.
Like, not even for the American customers?
No, they haven't listed any price. I know in Europe they're about $1,200-$1,300.
$1,200-$1,300 Canadian or Euro?
Euro. So here, I bet you it'll be cheaper than the JR carbine or the Arrow.
I don't know. $1,200-$1,300 Euro? That's like $2,500 Canadian.
I'm thinking it's going to be cheaper. Did you see any prices on it, Benny?
No, I didn't. But how much did you say? Let's say it's €1,200.
I'm thinking from what I've last, because I didn't even look at the prices. From what I remember, it's actually going to be probably cheaper than the JR carbine or the Arrow Precision.
If it is €1,300 at today's market, that would come out to $1,975.25 Canadian.
No, I don't think it's going to be that high. I don't think it's going to be much over $1,200 Canadian.
There's no way.
Just guess. I have no idea on the pricing of it yet.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if it came in at $2,000.
No, I don't think it should be that much. I hope not, because a lot of people, I wouldn't mind one, but I'm not going to spend $2,000 on a carbine.
Yeah, for a pistol caliber carbine, I wouldn't spend that much either.
No, I don't think I think it's going to be either at par, which is on the market, or a little bit less. I don't think it's going to be that high.
Well, how much are the, who making the new stuff, the VZ Scorpion, or? No, that's not
I think
the wrong
they're one. About 11.
Yeah.
Well, what I'll do is I'll find out. I'll find a suggested price that is for the U.S. market, and we'll talk about it next week because I really don't know. I can't stipulate or speculate on what it's going to be.
You can speculate all you want.
I know, but I don't want people to take me at my word since I work part-time for Grandpa because I honestly don't know what the price would be.
An Evo, a CZ Scorpion Evo at Atlanta Shooting Supply is $1,279.99.
On my Grandpa price sheet, it just says prices to be announced. So I can only just remember what I've heard people paying, talking about what they paid for it on the forum.
Yeah.
Whether it was euros or US dollars, I don't know.
Okay.
It just a speculated guess. Okay, so story two, the new stuff. The Seraphim Armory, they've came out with a couple new shotguns. First of all, they've got the Storm V2 series, which looks awfully much like the Dagger that Tactical Imports has. This thing, it's pretty cool. It's got the same stock and grip with the adjustable comb that Wanda's Uzcon 46 has. So it's a little bit different on the front end, but the back end, it looks pretty cool. It's 12 gauge. Barrel configurations are going to be 9 inch, 11, 14, and 18.6. Mag fed with 6 or 11 round capacity. There's going to be a 2 fed to be announced. They don't mention that there's going to be a 2 round hunting magazine, so we should keep our eye out for that. It's going to have a full or just a rear rail. I would recommend going for just a rear rail because from what I've read online, full rail requires full, you have to remove the whole rail for disassembly. So if you just have a rear rail, it's just easy to just take it apart for cleaning and stuff. Most models will have fiber optic front sights. They have a MSL of 529, but this new stock I was talking about may put it up a little bit more. The second one they have is called the Intrepid. It's a striker fired, so no exposed hammer, single shot, 12 gauge with a 13 inch barrel and a shortened stock. This thing is going to kick like a mule. It's got a gold bead front sight. They didn't have any choke listed, but the overall length, it will be making it non-restricted. And MSRP is $229. So the coolest one they've got,
Thomas, that one's the kind of one you install underneath your desk at work. You're not actually supposed to shoulder that when you shoot it.
It was funny. They posted this on Facebook, and I mentioned it's going to kick like a mule. And Seraphim posted something to the effect that, well, you know, that's what freedom's going to sound like. And I said no. I said no.
Bang, ouch.
Yeah, freedom sounds like pew pew pew, not bang, ouch, extract, reload, bang, ouch, extract, reload. I don't think they're impressed with my response, but I thought it was funny. But, you know, if you're into single shorties, it looks cool. The other one they've got more or less the same thing in either a side-by-side or an over-and-under variant. The Pale Rider, actually, this looks pretty cool. It's got a single selective trigger and the selectors in the safety. They don't have any barrel lengths listed, but from what it says, it's going to be non-restricted as well. It's got twin ejectors, a gold bead front sight. I wonder if this would be cowboy action legal. If it had choke tubes, this thing would be cool.
It's so short, though.
I know, but you know what I would do with this thing? I would take off the rubber butt pad. I'd put 2 pounds of lead in the buttstock because, again, it's going to kick like a mule. It's like, you ever seen those 12-gauge pistols?
Yes.
It's like taking your – you ever take a baseball bat to a cement post when you're a kid and hitting it? All that energy gets transferred to your hand. It's going to be uncomfortable. But, you know, hey, some people like that. People like shooting the Smith & Wesson X-Frame 500s in their hand cannons. You know, some guys like that stuff. Yeah, I'm old and sensitive. I wouldn't care for it. But, hey, some guys are into it.
If they can keep their, like this Pale Rider, if they can keep that, like, in a reasonable price range, even with an extended barrel, that'd be a nice, you know, trap gun. That doesn't cost $1,000.
No, $699 is the suggested list on it.
Yeah, but that's with the, you know, 13 or the 10 inch barrel, whatever actual length is.
Actually, I think Greater Napanee Gunworks have quite a few over and unders for that in that price range with 26 and 28 inch barrels. So there's a lot of Turkish over and unders and side by side that are less than $1,000. Out there in the market. And what I think is cool is it says it has twin injectors. Most of them have extractors. So for, you know, hopefully they get something with a longer barrel, because usually the ejectors tend to be on the higher price models. And the newest one they have is similar. It's a, they don't even have a name for it, but it's a double barrel side by side pistol grip shotgun. And so
this is definitely the thing you mount under your desk, because there's no shoulder stock here whatsoever.
No, this is something you want to hide underneath the seat or under your desk. Actually, you probably want to bolt it to your desk.
That's what I mean. It's like in the movies with a swivel.
Yeah, and you're going to want to use both hands, because this thing is tiny. But they only have the three listed for now. But for more information, visit International Shooting Supplies. They're the main retailer right now.
Cool.
It's cool. A lot of, you know, some people trashed some of the Turkish stuff coming in, but there's so much of it, and some of it's half decent. You really have to get out there and see for yourself whether you like it or not. But I've seen some really cool looking stuff coming out of Turkey these days. And it's reasonably priced. I mean, for the new shooter, you can't complain. I mean,
no, that's side by side or over under. I think it'd look cooler as if you're going cowboy action, side by side. If you're going trap, then over under. But if they could get that barrel like to a normal length, then yeah, that looks really cool. I would love to have that in my collection.
I'd just be afraid to pull the trigger.
In cowboy action, you actually need to have a 16-inch barrel, I believe.
Oh, well, there goes that.
You know what, though? That might just be for the rifle.
Who knows?
Well, because if it's shorter than 16 inches in the U.S., then it would be a SBR.
Right.
Even if it is a lever action. But then again, their shotgun rules are different than their rifle rules, so maybe that doesn't apply for
Shotgun's
that.
Shotgun's 18.
Pardon me?
Shotgun, like a rifle is minimum 16 inches for barrel length, and shotgun is minimum of 18 inches.
Oh, okay. So maybe it's even longer than for cowboy. They clearly designed it around the American laws, so.
Yeah, uh-huh. they had to, because I think Sarah just has the Stoger, and it's, what, 20 inches?
Sure. It's about yay long.
Yay long. Yeah. That's an appropriate form of measurement.
Yeah, especially on a podcast.
Here, hold up the mic. We'll have a better look at it, Mike.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, so the main topic this week is, I don't know if you guys can guess, you, the audience, can guess who wrote this one. We'll let you email in and let us know.
I didn't.
Don't give away. With three-gun and multi-gun competitions becoming more and more popular, people are looking to make their closer to regular capacity magazines closer to full-size dimensions. So I looked into mag extensions this week, and I couldn't find a lot available. The first thing I did find was mags from MFT, LAR magazine extensions. It's about $18 with options for color, length, and finish. I found one review on YouTube, and that was it. He liked that it doesn't break easily, but it does separate, so gotta keep that in mind. The second one I found was from CTS Supplies. It was $30 without any options. When I looked today, they were sold out. They are weighted, so it'll fall out easily when ejected. However, I found reviews that weren't so happy with them. They threatened to detach every time they were manipulated, and if you stress the joints, then the mags can pop out from under the screw. You can fix that with a washer and tape, but that's more effort.
And effort isn't our game.
Effort is not in our game. You know, otherwise you can just take a 2x4 and use electric tape to duct tape it to the bottom.
There you go.
That would actually work. Okay, I should like sell 2x4 spray painted, and now people have LAR extensions.
And a foot of duct tape. There you go.
Yeah, it comes with the tape you need. Exactly. I also did hear mention of 3D printing your own, but I don't have a 3D printer, so that's not happening.
Well, maybe this is your excuse to buy one.
Oh, no. I have too many other things I'd rather spend that money. I need excuses to spend.
We have a listener that has a 3D printer because they printed up some CCFR tags and sent them to us.
You got CCFR tags?
Yeah.
I didn't get CCFR tags.
I got them in the mail.
I didn't get any either. Wow. I guess we know who the listener's favorite host is.
Yeah, I was going to say, though, Mike, you did get a mag couplers and an oversized
mag release. Yes. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I did. So.
I did get a grip, but I gave it away.
Yeah, you tried to give away my stuff, too.
I did, actually.
Well, I'm sure Crystal is enjoying it.
And it was very nice of Anika to let you keep the stuff, too, Mike.
It was. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, we got to find out if the the mag release for the Ruger American is the same as the 1022.
I would assume it is. It's the same design, same magazine, so the mag release is probably the same.
I'm just super lazy, and I haven't sent an email to Kelly or Kevin from Mapleseed and asking them, because they did get a MDT chassis for the Ruger American, so I'm assuming they probably have augmented in whatever and checked it out, and they'll probably know that information without me having to actually find the 1022, take out the mag release, and take out the mag release from my Ruger American. So, okay. The other options that I found are mag couplers. So until now, what we're just talking about is so far it's just an extra piece of plastic or metal that attaches to the bottom of the mag that extends it to either a 20 or a 30 round magazine dimension. So you also have like the mag wedge, which is about $16 for one. It's made of aluminum, so it's solid when sliding into the mags. So this is actually a magazine coupler, but it gives it a very V shape due to the angle. It also curves, which could be a good or bad thing depending on what you're comfortable with. The other option are mag couplers, like I said. So you have the mag wedge and Caldwell both make one. So I like the Caldwell one. That's the one I have. It was $13 for two. I did a review on it. It's on bennylewis.ca. And I like it a lot because actually they're pretty solid and, I've thrown my mags around and I haven't had any issues at all.
We should also add that these are just extensions. They don't increase the magazine capacity at all.
Yes, this is true.
Okay.
It's not like in the States where you can get like a +2 mag plate at the bottom of your Glock mag or something. These are either attaching two separate magazines together, or it's just adding a nice big piece of aluminum or plastic to the bottom of your mag. So, like, the mag wedge is a coupler for $16. Again, it's made out of aluminum. It looks popular. I found a few reviews of it, people who liked it. They said it makes the mag look seamless, low profile, and it works perfectly. But I like my Caldwell ones because they work nicely and they're not coming apart anytime soon.
Now, here's one of my concerns with those couplers is whenever you drop a mag, you're dropping the mag on the feed lips on the other end. Have you noticed any damage yet from anything like that?
No, because I've only been in two events where I actually did mag changes and just dropped my mags without, you know, taking them out. And I don't remember what I did during the Ragnarok course, but during the 3-gun, I definitely tilted my rifle a little, so they weren't landing directly on the feed lips.
Yeah. See, that would be my biggest concern, would be somewhere where either you're, you know, either indoors where it's a concrete floor or outside on like a gravel range and those feed lip dropping on there and then them getting dinged up and bent over time and then you start getting feeding issues.
Right.
Yeah.
So also remember, I am personally running the aluminum or steel mags. I'm not running the plastic ones. I don't know if the plastic ones have an issue. I have no experience with them.
Yeah.
Whenever I did choose, I always did go with the metal ones. Not necessarily because I thought they were tougher, but also because they'll drop free easier. And I just, you know, being old school that way.
Yeah.
Well, for pistols, a lot of people actually just use bumper pads. Henny makes bumper pads, and they add a little weight to the bottom of your pistol. So when your pistol drops free, it hits the bumper pad and doesn't...
When your magazine drops free, your pistol should never be dropping free.
When your magazine drops free from the pistol...
Especially if you're shooting at a SIG.
Yeah, and using a Black Hawk holster. But I know Henny makes some good bumper pads. I actually had a buddy who he cut up a bunch of hockey pucks, hard rubber hockey pucks, and he made them up as bumper pads. I'm sure it was messy as hell, but bumper pads are a nice extension for pistol mags.
How did he manage that, though?
I have no idea. It looked like heck, but it worked.
Super glue.
I tried this. I tried the same thing actually when I saw it. I figured, gee, that's a good idea. So I had some high density foam that I got from work. So I cut the high density foam to the same diameter as the butt plate on my magazine, and I glued it. The only problem is when I dropped the magazine, it added enough weight where it came down and it hit the high density foam. But there was so much spring to it, the mag would hit the ground and then bounce up another foot. So I had to actually get bumper pads because my magazines were bouncing when I dropped them. So
yeah,
you had to be there.
Yeah. But those pistol mag extensions are pretty nice. I bought Sarah a couple for her M&P. When we put a magwell on it, it made it too big to be able to easily insert a magazine. You had to put one of those bumper pads on there. And hers is all aluminum. So there are definitely a lot of options out there for people who want to add a little bit more weight and length onto their magazines.
You just got to watch it because some of those bumper pads won't fit in a magwell too.
Yeah. And also, if you're depending on your game, some of them are legal and some of them are not.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's something I didn't think about.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame we can't get, as Mike wrote here, these are Band-Aid solutions, right? So if only we can just get someone to say magazine capacity laws are stupid and useless and we need to get regular capacity magazines.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have these issues.
Well, it also seems I've seen those hex mags that have just seemed to have exploded on the market. And now, I don't know, who knows if they'll ever come back again. But those are the ones that Crystal told us about, the 10-round magazines, but they are a full size, a full, quote-unquote, 30-round magazine size. So yeah. You get your 10 rounds, you know, your 10-round pistol mag for your competition, but yet you are still getting the full length, which to me seems like that would be the best solution to it all.
So yeah, those guys are just running, I don't know if they've just made their own or there is a company in the States that's that makes inserts for different magazines that make that limit the capacity. So if we were to ever get rid of the mag laws, you would just remove this insert and you would again have 30 round magazines. Or if you go to the States for competition or something, you remove the insert and when you cross the border, and then when you come before you come back, you put them back in.
before you come back,
yes.
People do that. They'll take their 30 round magazines when they get to the States. They'll take the pin out, but before they come back over the border, they put it back in.
Yeah,
that's not uncommon.
I question every time you do that, does that wear out, especially on I could see doing that on an all steel magazine, but if you're using like a Magpul 30 round magazine, would that be wearing on the plastic every time?
I'm sure it would.
That would be my concern, is that you're about to cross back into the border, your buddy's in the passenger seat putting the rivets back in, then all of a sudden snap, like, huh. Like, what do you do?
So if he's got his little rivet gun back there and he breaks it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I know that Aztec Armory, when they bring in polymer mags, or at least the Magpul, they use this insert instead of using a rivet, just because it's cleaner. You can still clean your magazines, and it doesn't damage the magazine tube at all. So
does it? Do you know if it uses a different magazine spring then?
No, it uses the same magazine spring. It's just it goes inside the spring and you have this.
It just keeps the follower spring, from going down far enough to accept more rounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a cool idea. See, because one of my issues is, and I have a bunch of LAR magazines and I bought them with the intention of buying the MTF ones that you can get. But I probably bought them for close to $20 each. And now I'm going to have to spend another $20 each just to make them so they're like a 20 or 30 round magazine length. Like, it seems kind of, the price just keeps adding up.
Yeah, it's counterproductive.
Right. Yeah, especially when you look at some of these options. Like, I've looked at the one from Canadian Tactical Cowboy. Yeah, I think that's what it is. Yeah, their $30 option. Well, that's almost, you know, that's more than the magazines were. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I want the competitive edge, it starts getting to the point where, you know, what's more important, you know, being able to eat or having the competitive edge?
So that's why I really like the Caudwells. The mag wedge might be nicer, but your mags are being held together by those little tabs that hold the base plate on. So I can see people being a little wary about that, where the Caudwell, it does add a little bit of bulk to your magazines, but it's like a solid piece of plastic being held together by solid screws. I don't know. I haven't had any issues of it, so I can't really... I can't complain. If I have an issue, then I'd obviously... my theory would go out the window. So
if someone wanted to find a review on these Caudwell magazine couplers, where could they go, Benny?
BennyLoose.ca /2... The links are in the show notes. Just go to my blog. I need to get some more stuff up there. But yeah, I do have a review on the Caudwell AR-15 magazine coupler. So
yeah. Good.
Yeah. The events. Who's going to take event number one? Thomas?
Well, there is the CCSA fishing draw, but for some reason the information
the who?
Isn't...
Sorry?
The CSSA, sorry, draw, but the information isn't in the show notes. So I'm going to skip to event two. The Canadian Wild Turkey Federation AMA Longbirds First Annual Hunting Heritage Banquet will be held on Saturday, February 10th from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Doors open at 5, dinners at 6. The address is 468 Lowe's Side Road, Amherstburg, Ontario. Tickets are single for $65, couple $95, youth $35. Single sponsor is $280, couple sponsor is $300, and a gold sponsor table is $1,200. Usually there's goodies for the $1,200 price. Contact Brian at 519-736-2221 or www.amasportsman.ca, and links in the show note. Event 3.
Event 3 at the Toronto Sportsman Show on March 14th to the 18th. Yeah, if you don't know what the Toronto Sportsman Show is by now, I don't know what to say.
Good luck.
Yeah.
You're a liberal.
Are either of you planning on attending it this year?
I'm not sure.
Was it last year we went, Benny?
No, you weren't there last year. You didn't go. I went just to see what's up, because that was the second year I went.
Oh, yeah, we went. So, it was the year before we met afterwards at the...
No, that was last year. Last year we didn't meet up at the... No, we didn't. Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was last year, you're right. But it wasn't the sportsman show, it was afterwards.
Yeah, you went to the sportsman show, and then we met up afterwards at the bar with Gavin and Tracy and the whole CCFR gang.
Yes, and Mary Patrick was there.
Yes. Actually, I went specifically to meet Mary Patrick because I'd never met her. It was nice seeing you too, but my whole point was seeing Mary.
It was nice seeing you too, Thomas.
But a lot of our friends were there. The whole gang from the Canadian Patriot podcast, they were all there.
Yeah, I see it more as a place to go and renew my memberships to the CSSA and CCFR, and just say hi to guys who I'm going to see at the show. It's not like I'm not going to see the stuff, because like you said, it's the same stuff every year. Hopefully it'll be something new this year. I don't know, but I'm just going to say hi to people. I'm not going to really peruse.
Hey, I got my new CCFR membership card in the mail.
Yeah, Mrs. Thomas?
Yes, it was addressed to Miss Thomas Donnelly.
Well, at least they're polite, Miss Thomas.
True. And then Tracy goes, well, maybe you filled it out wrong. And I said, I didn't fill it out. You filled it out. She wrote my name on it, and she handed it to Summer and said, here, put this aside. We'll fill it out when we get home. And my original card just didn't have any gender. It just says Thomas Donnelly. So I didn't put Miss.
So they Miss assumed Tracy put your gender.
Miss. Yes.
And they got it wrong.
They
got it wrong out of the 63 options.
Well, the last time I looked, I was a mister, so nothing has changed since then. But I thought it was funny. I posted on the CCFR webpage as a sense of humor. I'm not offended by it at all. I just thought it was funny. And it gave me chances to tease Tracy.
That's good. Okay, event number 4 is Canadian Sports Women's Society in association with the Canadian Wild Turkey Federation, Women Like Us, and Bushnell Trigger Effect TV presents the second annual Ladies Intro to Turkey Hunting, April 7, 2018, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. East Elgin Sports Association in Elmer, Ontario. Cost is $75 per person, non-refundable. Includes ammo, lunch, refreshments, insurance, use of a shotgun and bows, gift bag, hands-on learning, and so much more. For more info, please contact Laurie Ann Horst at 226-923-0193. Link is in the show notes, but as usual, that is sounds like an amazing deal. $75, you get lunch and to shoot.
And I got to give pretty a awesome. I got to give a shout out to Laurie. She is now a sponsored shooter for Kent Cartridge. Daniel Batting from Kent Cartridge now has Laurie as an official sponsored shooter. So that's cool. Way to go, Laurie.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Event number 5. Thomas, take it away.
The CCFR Gunny Girl calendar is on sale. They dropped the price down for $15.99 from $20. I should have waited. I would have saved $4. This year, the CCFR calendar highlights and promotes some of our amazing women and with beautiful, tasteful, and stunning photos of them and their favorite firearms. The fundraise from this project will be used to financially support the women's program. Each calendar comes with a registration number on the back for prize giveaways. Qualities are limited. Don't forget when you get your calendar on back, there's a number. Go online to register it. And I believe, don't quote me on the time, but Tracy, I believe, is doing the first draw live tomorrow on Facebook. I think it's 3:00, she said. So the first prize is a prize pack from Select Shooting Supplies. Cool. There's a range bag, some hearing protection, and I forget what the other thing was. I didn't write it down. But Dean is the first prize giveaway.
Cool.
So thanks, Select Shooting Supplies.
Listener feedback. What? Thomas?
You want me to do it? Okay.
I can do it. I was just saying, it sounded like you were going to say something.
No, I was just mumbling to myself again. It's just an age thing. As you get older, sometimes you just mumble.
I know you're older now, but I'm not there yet.
Oh, just wait till the drooling starts.
God forbid. So, listener email from Kyle. I'm a father of 4. My oldest is going to be 6 soon. Son, I was wondering what age you would recommend starting at the range. I do start with an air rifle or 22 right off the bat? So actually, hopefully, we're going to have a very special guest on sometime in the future. We haven't heard back from them yet to discuss this very topic. So,
well, you guys have kids, and you've got this coming up anyway. You've thought about this yourself, Mike. What are you going to start Sarah off with? Of Sarah.
Sarah?
Yeah. What are you going to start off Sarah with?
Yeah.
He already did. That's why he was a daughter.
I think it's hard to say because I think it's not a question of age. It's a question of maturity.
Exactly.
I have a couple of nieces and nephews, and some of the older ones I wouldn't trust with a stick. But some of the younger ones, I wouldn't, you know, they might be ready for, you know, a trip to the range. It's really a question of maturity. So that's what makes it really hard to answer the question. I definitely do think that an air rifle or 22 are good ways to start. Depending on if you can shoot in your backyard, you know, that's where air rifle really comes in handy. That might almost be a way to begin because kids have short attention spans. And if you're even a 20-minute drive to the range, you know how it is. Packing up the car to go, you have a couple rifle cases, a few bags of ammo, and your earmuffs and everything. And then you load the kid up. And, well, I'm sure he knows if he has kids that, you know, you say you're going to leave at 9, but you're not really leaving till 9:15 or 9:30 because, you know, kids do that to you. So
wait,
you're going
to Mike, it only takes you 15 minutes to get ready to go sometimes? Wow, that's impressive.
I pre-plan a lot.
Yeah, I'm sort of catching on to that too.
Yeah.
We got to start leaving at 8:30 so we can leave the house at 9.
Yeah, exactly. But either way, the point is that, you know, if even if your kid's excited about it at the moment, if it takes you an hour to get from that excited moment to being at the range, and to me, that's still very quick turnaround time, they may lose interest. And when they start realizing that, oh, well, every time I ask, you know, dad to take me to the range, it's going to take an hour to get there. We shoot for a little bit and it's going to take an hour to get back. And that's time that I don't get to spend watching TV, playing with my friends, whatever else. It may cause them to lose interest. Whereas if they could shoot, even if you go all the way down, like instead of using an air rifle, go with like an airsoft, something like that. If you can shoot that in your backyard without having the police called on you, then that might almost be a good way to go, because it will allow them to engage in it. You can still teach them all the safety aspects of it, and it will allow you to, when kid walks up and says, hey, dad, I want to go shooting, you know, in 5 minutes, you can be out back, you know, reviewing the safety rules, instead of, you know, 2 hours later sitting at the range going over it all.
And you're not limited to your backyard. You can. There's nothing wrong with setting up an air gun range in your basement. I have one.
Yeah, depending on your setup, yeah.
I don't think my neighbors would appreciate me setting up a shooting range in the parking lot.
In your backyard, basement. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or you know, there's your balcony, but they might, yeah, you might get the tactical team called.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but so, depending on your room too, right? And then the other thing is too, it's if you do make some type of air gun range or airsoft range in the basement, you just take consideration what you're using to stop the pellets.
Yeah,
there's the window tacking that you use for on windows. I forget what it's called. You can get it. It's really, really thick, and when the pellets hit, it just gets absorbed into it, so you don't have that bang, bang, bang. So you're not driving the wife crazy.
Yeah, the big downside, obviously, if the police call on you, but the only other downside I can see, if you're doing anything in your backyard, if you're, I'm thinking like subdivision where you're shooting at a fence or something like that, is are you teaching your kid that a fence is a suitable backstop? That would be my only other concern, is that as you progress to larger caliber, does your kid start to assume that a fence is a suitable backstop?
Right.
So that is something that you would have to take into consideration, whether you want to, I don't know, I almost want to say take the risk of them interpreting it that way.
Well, most of it's all education. Like as Cal's saying, what age would you recommend starting? Well, as you said, Mike, it depends on the age of the child, the maturity of the child. You know, if the kid's six and he's expressing an interest, sure, take him to the range with you. Let him experience, let him hear what the noise and the smell and everything like. And if they express an interest, then, you know, start with a little education first. Take the curiosity away from them and teach them. This is a gun. These are the parts. You know, educate them a little bit just to get rid of that curiosity that gets them to trouble, and just, you know, do it as steps. If it's six, if they're interested and they want to learn and they have the attention span, then I would do it incrementally. You know, teach them a little bit about firearm safety, show them the parts, how it works, and, you know, let them tag along. The problem is they lose interest quickly, like you said, Mike. So
yeah,
you know, if you take them up to the range, have plan B with mom or somebody else, because, you know, unless they're into it.
Yeah. Yeah, and you also don't want the kid to sit in the back of the car while you're shooting off your rounds, you know, practicing for your IPSC match, because your kid didn't express as much interest as you were hoping for. You know, they're going to hate going to the range, and they're going to associate that to going to the range as a bad time. So,
yeah. But like Benny said, he has a very special guest he's trying to get. So once we get this person on, we can discuss it further, I guess.
Yep.
But we'll keep Kyle in mind when we have the guest.
Yep.
Thomas, you love Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns. Why don't you take the next...
One actually was a message from Matthew from Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns. He quite often replies to... He listens to the show, and he'll often message us on Facebook. So we were doing the budget Red Dots, and Benny and I discussed afterwards how we like the Spark and the Spark 2 and that stuff that we like. And Matthew said, I like the Sig Romeo 5 more than my Spark, even possibly more than my Spark 2. And I hadn't actually seen this one yet. So the Romeo 5 is actually a 2-minute of angle dot that provides 10 illumination settings, 8 daylight plus 2 night vision settings, which is cool. And it also has a motion-activated illumination, so it powers up when you sense the motion and powers off when it does not. It uses the 2032 battery, and it's side-loading, not on the top, for allowing quick battery replacement. It has the integrated Picatinny rail, and it's rated as immersion waterproof up to 1 meter. And it comes with a riser. And I went online, FOC has these for $279. So
wow.
if the Spark isn't your, or the Vortex Spark isn't your thing, FOC has this red dot for $279. And thanks, Matt. I hadn't seen this one. What I go look for is the smallest dot I can. And I haven't seen a 2 MOA red dot before. So this is really cool. I appreciate you sending it to us.
Yeah. And the first thing, I just Googled it to look at, see what it looks like, to remind myself what it looks like. And the first thing that came to mind was HoloSun, and I'm pretty sure the HoloSuns are going for more than that, even though they are supposed to be a budget red dot. So good for Sig for putting that out.
Yeah, you never know. It could be made by HoloSun. We don't know.
I was going to say, I seem to remember hearing that Sig had bought a site manufacturer so that they could pretty much call it their own.
You know what? I remember hearing that last year. And the HoloSun are back in the country now. The distributor didn't have them for the longest time. Nobody had them. And the last couple months now, everybody has them.
Coincidence?
Greater Napanee Gunwork just had an order of them. And I think NAS just posted an order of them too. Yeah. I know Greater Napanee Gunworks for sure, because they had it on their Facebook page a couple weeks ago. But you know, if you can get the SIG.
Yeah.
Anyway, I put the links for it in the show notes if you want to go on the FOC website, and they have all the data on there for it. So
please send any feedback, questions, or comments you may have to host@newshootercanada.ca, our Facebook page, or in the comment section of our website at newshootercanada.ca.
iTunes?
None. And yes, I checked, Thomas, before you ask.
Facebook likes, we are at 1305. You know what? I have a feeling we're at 1306. I think George is screwing with us, because I went in and I unlike the Canadian redneck. And as soon as I unlike his page, we get unliked one. I bet you it's George.
I was on the Facebook page, and I like at first when I logged in, I was like, oh, 1306. And I do a couple things, and I go to log in. Hey, I'm already down to 1305.
Yeah, it just varies. You know, people get mad, they unfriend you, and I guess they get rid of stuff. Who knows?
Benny!
Yeah, closing comments.
Benny!
I wanted to ask, Thomas, you said ATI is SA Armory's American company? Or distributor or something?
Was it? I don't remember.
That's what he said. I don't know if that's true or not.
So American Tactical Imports?
That's it.
Okay, because they make, they made the Omni lower, so the polymer lowers for AR-15s and stuff like that. I just wanted to clarify if that indeed was them.
I can't tell because I just took my glasses off to read the next parts. Because it's in a piece of paper. I'd have to scroll all the way up.
Nah, that's fine. I Googled ATI because I wanted to see what they do, and apparently they make the GSG 1911 and stuff like that. So there's a lot of stuff in Canada that's in Canada under the ATI name. So that's interesting.
I'd have to look. You'd have to go scroll back up and have a look.
Okay, so Thomas, do you have a letter you want to read or something?
Well, one of the listeners asked us, suggested doing a show about some of the ITAR and some of the regulations. So when I ordered my break, I actually got a letter in the mail from Tandem Cross describing what some of the restrictions are. And first of all, if you order something from the U.S., all orders are international orders, they're final orders. There's no returning on them. I'll tell you what they wrote. They put international traffic arms regulations. Some items on these websites are subject to the ITAR, and export is strictly prohibited without authorization or license issued by the U.S. State Department of Trade and Defense. As such, items are regulated by ITAR, are subject to exception status for shipment to destinations outside the U.S. Under exemption 123.7A, there's an anywhere exemption, which allows up to $100 wholesale of category parts to be shipped without a license long as they're non-auto and semi-auto guns only. That exception excludes barrels, cylinders, receivers, frames, and breech mechanism. And it does not allow shipment to a banned country. Under exemption 123.17, there's a Canadian exemption. Okay, the Canadian exemption allows up to $500 of wholesale parts, components, accessories, or attachments for any category one firearm to be exported without a license to Canada. So it's not 100, it's 500 for Canada. Of course, this excludes barrels, cylinders, receiver frames, complete breech mechanism, parts for auto firearms. It must be for end use in Canada or return to the United States or a temporary import into the U.S. of a Canadian origin item and return to Canada for a Canadian citizen. And an AES declaration is also required. Another thing too is that whatever the part is, the company has to be registered with the State Department. I've had stuff where I've ordered stuff through Brunel's, $50 grips. Brunel canceled the order because the grip manufacturer is not registered with the U.S. State Department, and therefore they can't exported over the border. So there is a Canadian exemption now, and unless it's one of the parts listed, you can now bring over at least $500 worth, which I thought was 100, so which is good.
Cool. Yeah, that's something that's always changing. Thomas, you got any shout outs?
Let's see. Matthew from Geek Couch Guns for messaging us about the cigarette dot. I like the 2MA. I like it. And actually, Matthew messaged us a lot, so we do appreciate it. Listener Robert McCafferty. He messaged me a lot on Messenger, and both he and his friends were switching over to HP 38 Power for the 45s, and his buddy went to the local gun shop, and the gun shop advised him to load 6.5 grains of HP 38 in a 45 ACP, and the guy did. Luckily, the guy mentioned to Robert the load that he was doing and before he actually shot it, because the maximum published load data for the bullet he was using was only 5.3. So, as always, don't take your buddy or the guy at the gun shop's advice. If you're going to be reloading, always read and use the published load data supplied by the manufacturer and never exceed the maximum load stated, because the guy could have lost some fingers or destroyed his gun, because, you know, going up 1.2, it's a lot in a 45.
Yeah. Mike, shout outs?
Nope.
So shout outs this week to MD for an amazing birthday weekend. Thank you so much. She really pulled out all the stops with Jamaican patties, chicken pot pie, chicken soup, the works. It was amazing. So,
and show notes.
And the show notes. Yes, and the show notes. So all you guys who were guessing, yeah. None of us wrote them. Ah!
Well, we didn't write the topic. MD wrote the topic for us. Birthday present. You lay back, honey. You relax. I'll write your topic this week.
Oh, yeah. I was
relaxing. Talk about an amazing wife.
Running around work all day. Yeah. Shout out to my parents and the family and everyone else and all of my Facebook friends that sent me happy birthday. Really brightened my day. And shout out to Jewel McClatchy for and sending her a happy birthday, because today is her birthday as well.
I did. I wished her a happy birthday as well.
So, yeah. That's pretty much it. Thomas, you want to take us out?
Until next week, keep your barrels downrange and smoking. Take a kid shooting.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
It's not about the odds, it's about the stakes. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I really like 22 Mag.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
Hopefully this gets better, but you guys kind of sound like a robot.
Robot.
Okay. Audacity in 3, 2, 1, go.
Wait, now go?
Now?
Someone's going to say something.